This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to the Morning Run on BFM 89.9, the business station. 6 o'clock this Friday morning, it's the 17th of February. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han here with you this morning. Good morning.
Good morning and happy Friday.
Friday.
Holla.
You know, I used to say Friday to Sharad, Sharad Kitten, and he wouldn't get it. He was like, what, Fry what?
Oh my gosh. Talk about the generational gap, huh?
It's cute, but you know what? We're all infinitely chirpy on Friday morning as we head into the weekend. You looking forward to the weekend?
Oh, heck yeah, of course. But unfortunately, I do have some family commitments to tend to. Oh, I shouldn't say unfortunately. Eh?
That's okay.
I apologize, nephew and niece, yes, but I will be at your event.
Well, family's lovely in small doses.
Yeah.
All right, well, stay with us today on The Breakfast Grill. We've got a really good one for you. Now, I don't know whether you've been following the controversy or the very public spat between Loop Holdings, that's the master franchisee of the bubble tea Chartime here in Malaysia, as with the brand owner and franchisor of Chartime, which is a Taiwanese-based company called La Caffa International. Now, they've been embroiled in this really public spat after La Caffa abruptly terminated the contract of Loop Holdings. And La Caffa had made, you know, comments, there were disagreements about ingredients, about a royalty payment. So as you may have read in the headlines, that Brian Liu, the CEO of CEO of Loop Holdings, right, has been out to defend the brand, and I think to kind of garner public support for the fact that the contract was abruptly cancelled. So what we're going to do today is get it from the man himself to clarify some of the conflicting reports in the news that we've been reading lately. So he's going to come on and tell us what's next for Chartime, for his brand Loop after Chartime.
Yeah, I think for the average man on the street here in Malaysia, I think the shock really came from the abrupt nature of the public announcement. I think that was key because according to our news team here at BFM, you know, they told us that apparently both La Caffa and Loop had been in arbitration talks for a while.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it was just the sudden and public nature of the announcement by La Caffa that really took everyone by surprise, and obviously since then it's just been one headline after another. But I guess for me, being a bubble tea fan of sorts,
me too.
Yeah, my question is, what's gonna happen to my Chartime points card? I do have a points card.
Oh, yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, so when I you know, was drinking it at an obscene amount of bubble tea, you know, I was racking up those points and I had never really claimed them. So now, what happens to my Chartime points?
Well, that's a very good point. You know, Loop Holdings had was given 45 days to rebrand. So before Chartime, the brand owner is going to take back that brand. That deadline is up tomorrow morning. So they are probably very busy trying to change up the brand. And Brian Liu is going to come on The Breakfast Grill and unveil the new brand to us.
Hey, how about that? So perhaps something new for Malaysians over the weekend?
Yeah, that's right. So maybe you can find out if your points card can be converted to this new brand. You know, it's also quite interesting. I got a couple comments to say, you know, the Brian Liu story has been widely reported and people want to hear the La Caffa side of the story. Now, we are trying to get La Caffa on The Breakfast Grill, but of course, it's in the meantime, while we're doing that, I will try to put forward La Caffa's arguments to Brian. As you may know, the BFM news team has been covering this issue for quite a while. They've spoken to representatives of La Caffa. So we're going to be putting forth La Caffa's arguments and get Brian to respond to them.
And some key points from La Caffa's side of the argument is that there were royalty payments that were not paid.
Mm-hmm, right? That's right. There was a dispute over royalty.
Okay. And the other one was the ingredients.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
So La Caffa said, well, all our ingredients is sourced from Taiwan and has been certified by by the Taiwan halal body. And he says, well, because allegedly Lube has not been using the sourced suppliers, we can't vouch for what they've been using. Now, just the hint of that controversy blew up into a storm. Mm. Of course, you know, when it comes to the halal certification, consumers are very sensitive about that. Brian has come out to respond to say that they are fully certified by Jakim. But, you know, as you saw with, say, Cadbury, even the hint of a scandal is enough to scare away consumers. I definitely want to talk to Brian about that, if that had hurt his brand's reputation in any way.
Certainly, yeah.
All right, so today on The Breakfast Grill, we'll find out more with the CEO of Lube Holdings, the former master franchisee of the Bubble Tea, Cha Time. Hope you don't get too thirsty as you listen to The Breakfast Grill. At 8:30 on Current Affairs today, we're going to be taking a look at the LGBT community and Islam. So there was a 3-minute video, Han, on homosexuality that was produced by Jakim. It went viral this week on social media. And essentially, the video mainly propagates that one's sexual orientation can be reversed with appropriate guidance.
Yeah, and you know, looking forward to this chat, you know, I am genuinely interested to find out Jakim's stance on this matter. And look, I do really think that this will be a great opportunity to help urban non-Muslims basically understand the government's official stance on this. You know,
I guess because we saw this video, and you know, the video garnered a lot of discourse on social media, we thought it best to go to Jakim directly and speak to them and ask exactly how they plan to handle non-heterosexual Muslims. So we spoke to Dr. Muhammad Izwan Yusuf, Assistant Director of the Family, Social and Community Division at Jakim, on the matter.
Di peringkat Jakim, kami mengambil pendirian, kita tidak bersetuju dengan perlakuan LGBT sama ada di sudut perlakuan liwat itu ataupun penyerupaan daripada seorang lelaki kepada perempuan dan sebaliknya. Pun begitu, kita tetap berusaha untuk tidak menafikan hak komuniti LGBT sekiranya mereka ingin mendapatkan bimbingan dan nasihat, maka kita akan sentiasa berusaha untuk membantu mereka dengan bimbingan nasihat yang selari dengan tuntutan syariat.
That was Dr. Muhammad Izwan Yusuf from Jakim talking about how one sexual orientation can be reversed with appropriate guidance. But he also says that Jakim believes that the LGBT community should not be alienated. We're going to explore this a little further on Current Affairs, so make sure you stay tuned for that. That's at 8:30 or just after the 8:30 news bulletin. And at 9:30 every Friday, we have the property show. Keith Kum today is going to be speaking to Ann Lords and Imran Clyde, managing partners of Nextdoor Property Communications. Both of them spearheaded the Malaysian Biennial Initiative. And this is founded on the same premise as the internationally renowned Venice Biennial and Chicago Biennial Initiative. So essentially what it is a research initiative that charts out the planning and development of cities for the next 100 years.
I wonder if that biennial initiative can still be applied to a city like KL, because it's just so packed already. Is there any hope for salvaging, you know, like the road system, for example?
The first starting project is Medini. Medini is kind of in Johor. So perhaps, you know, if you look at Medini, you can lay it out on say a huge conference table and plot what you want this city to look like in 100 years. But you know, Han, often we do the 5-year plan and the 10-year plan, and what, TN50 is now a 30-year plan?
Yeah, 30-year plan.
So it's also important to have what you want your city to look in 100 years. And although you may not see it in your lifetime, but you know, the thinking and the planning of it is important, because again, if someone had done this 100 years ago, KL might not have the roads that KL has today.
Yeah, no, I mean, fair point, but at the same time, I mean, I don't think anyone 100 years ago, I mean, what's 100 years ago? 1917? Oh my word, yeah, 1917, yeah. So I don't think anyone in 1917 really had the kind of foresight to imagine what would have to, like, nowadays, you know?
1917,
the idea of MRTs.
How do you forecast the future? That's true.
I mean, what's 100 years from now? You know, like teleportation? I don't know.
Yeah. So. But I guess it's easier now because, you know, we do have some data. We've been collecting data for several years. We can project what's going to happen in the future, perhaps population growth. We may not be able to directly, I mean, you know, it may not be for certain, but at least a rough idea of perhaps accommodating growing cities. So really quite interesting. I'm curious to know more about the Malaysia Biennial Initiative. Let's find out more on the Property Show. That's at 9:30 today. But 10 minutes past 6, very quickly, let's take a look at the news. Of course, the North Korean assassination still on people's lips. Han, I don't know about you, but everyone's fascinated with this story. The latest news is that the Malaysian police have detained a third suspect in connection with the murder of Kim Jong-nam. The third suspect was apparently detained to facilitate investigations. He's the boyfriend of the second suspect.
Yeah, the second female suspect, yeah.
So if you remember yesterday when we spoke about it, there was a female suspect with a Vietnamese passport that was arrested. And we also learned that there was perhaps more to this story. There were more people involved. A second woman was arrested earlier yesterday. She was holding an Indonesian passport, and apparently now a third man has been arrested. The man is the boyfriend of the second woman.
And I think what's key here is that among all those who have detained in relation to this matter so far, this latest suspect is a Malaysian. So 26-year-old Muhammad Farid bin Jalaluddin, this is according to the Royal Malaysian Police's press statement. You know, yeah, so again... Is this the last?
This is such a geopolitical issue.
International,
now.
Yeah, it is. It's like an international spy ring, you know, like assassin ring or alleged assassin ring of sorts. Yeah, it's fascinating though. So, it's really like something from a movie.
Yeah. The half brother of the North Korean dictator was assassinated in Malaysia by a Vietnamese woman with a Malaysian passport on the way to Macau. Yeah. This is crazy.
I am looking forward to this movie, you know, when it comes. I mean, you gotta bet that it's gonna come
out. How would they get the movie rights? They would have to get that from North
Kim
Korea.
Kim Jong-un, yeah.
You know, I have to say, all this has brought to light the diplomatic ties between North Korea and Malaysia. Now, I have to say, I remember reading about the fact that Malaysia, you know, maintain some kind of diplomatic ties with North Korea. But it wasn't until this issue or this incident happened that I realized there was a North Korean embassy right here in KL. I had no idea. But apparently diplomatic relations between our two countries were first established in 1973. Mm-hmm. And apparently there are North Koreans living in Malaysia, but only in Sarawak, I believe. Mm. And if you remember, that came to light after a controversy where a North Korean had died. So then we realized, oh wait, there was a North Korean living in Sarawak.
That's right. And look, we Malaysians, we are allowed visa-free travel to North Korea.
Are we allowed visa-free travel?
That's according to this article from the Wall Street Journal. Yeah, but the question is, would you want to go to North Korea? I mean, I don't know. You would? Melissa?
The Korea International Travel Company says we warmly welcome Malaysians to Pyongyang.
Oh,
so perhaps if you're looking for an alternative vacation spot this year, one to think about.
Forget
right
Hawaii
there.
With AirAsia X. Let's go to Pyongyang. I don't know.
All right. Let's take a quick look. Also, just to end on some lighthearted news, because, you know, as I think, again, it's been, I always have to remind myself that despite the absurdity of this story, at the end of the day, a man died. Mm. You know, a man was killed in a very brutal and cold manner. So despite the fascination we may have with, you know, the more bizarre details of this case, at the end of the day, there was a man who died. So we will remember that as we continue our reporting on this. But again, on just a lighthearted note, I saw this piece that made me smile. An entrepreneurial 7-year-old had written a letter to Google. And she asked for a job. And she had been discussing with her father. And Cleo Bridgewater decided, she said, she's going to write to Google and ask for a job because she wants to work there. And she adorably started the letter with, "Dear Google boss, my name is Chloe. And when I'm bigger, I would like a job with Google. I also want to work in a chocolate factory and do swimming in the Olympics. I go swimming on a Saturday and a Tuesday." And it goes on and on and on about wanting to sit on beanbag chairs and go down slides and ride go-karts. Like, as you famously know, Google is known to have a somewhat more interesting,
relaxed
working atmosphere.
Right. You know, and also, you know, I think it's kind of fascinating that someone is writing to Google via letter. Like, you know, like this.
Actually,
as opposed to email, using Gmail.
You know, this is only her second time writing letter. The first letter she wrote was to Santa.
Okay.
I know. And the
same thing, Santa, Google, you know.
Well, Google's boss can be seen as Santa in a seven-year-old's eyes. Yeah. But the best thing is the CEO, Sundar Pichai, he wrote back.
Yeah,
and
that
was what made me smile. Yeah. I mean, this guy is the head of one of the world's biggest tech giants. And he took the time to write back saying, thank you so much for your letter. I'm glad you like computers and robots, and I hope that you will continue to learn about technology. He also continues, I think if you keep working hard and following your dreams, you can accomplish anything you set your mind to, from working at Google to swimming at the Olympics.
I feel like I need to write a letter to Sundar Pichai
you
right now.
You may not get the cute reply you want. Like, I
want to sit on beanbag chairs too. You know what I'm saying?
You know what you can
Hire
do?
Me.
You can do. You can write in, you know, using your other hand. So if you're right-handed, you can write in the left hand. So it looks like a child's handwriting.
That's terrible. You're asking me to lie on my application now? Come on now.
Dear Google boss, I'm a 35-year-old man.
34.
But I would like a job at Google. Yeah. This is my second letter. The first one being to Santa.
I know. No, I think the first one was to my crush in
Santa
1.
Was it a love letter?
Yeah,
oh,
it was, yeah.
Adorable. You are a romantic player.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I'm out of the game now. Yeah.
Right. 16 minutes past 6 o'clock. We'll be back with more news after this on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, My Best Friend's Girl by The Cars. Good morning. This is The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han, 6:21 on the clock, Friday the 17th of February. Now, Han, I don't know whether you've noticed, but according to research findings, we are experiencing a narcissism epidemic.
Epidemic. Those are really strong words right there, but pray do tell. Yes.
So apparently research has shown that we're experiencing more and more narcissism around us. In data from 37,000 college students, this is in the US, narcissistic personality traits rose as fast as obesity from the 1980s to the present, and the shift was especially pronounced in women. Now, the rise in narcissism is accelerating, with scores rising faster in the 2000s than in previous decades. So if you look, music is getting more narcissistic. What do people tweet about on Twitter? Of course, themselves, and, you know, selfies. Selfies galore. Selfies everywhere. You can't turn around without seeing a selfie.
No, and that's the thing. I wonder if, you know, I mean, going back to this whole chicken versus egg, you know, argument, I wonder if social media is just, you know, tapping into the existing narcissistic undertones in society. You know, it's just like an outlet. Or, you know, is it really helping us make, or create more narcissistic people? I wonder.
Yeah, well, okay, so we... mental health professionals say we all have a little bit of narcissism with us. It's tied to the ego and self-confidence. It's not necessarily a bad thing. Uh-huh. However, I do agree with you. Social media has made it easier to tap into these feelings. So easier to showcase your narcissism. So while you have narcissism inside you, you're also surrounded by images or an outward expression of narcissism.
Right. So it, like uber narcissism.
Uber narcissism, that's right.
I just made up that term.
So I guess trying to, let's take a look at this so-called epidemic and learn exactly what narcissism is, how to deal with narcissists, and also how to kind of suppress that in you.
Wow, suppress.
Suppress.
Wow.
I don't know. I mean, do you think you should...
Not accept, but
be proud of and flaunt. So yes, I'm narcissistic. Why not? I'm proud of it.
Well, I mean, I would think that such an approach, you know, would certainly rub a lot of people around you the wrong way, because that would imply that, you know, I'm so full of myself, the world centers around me, the rest of you are inferior.
Well,
right?
That's what
I'm not bitter about this at all. Like, don't get me wrong.
Well, but apparently research shows that narcissists feel so good about it. So if you just ask if they are narcissistic, they don't mind admitting it.
Wow.
Yeah,
so,
I know.
Melissa, are you narcissistic?
No, I'm not.
Really?
I've never taken a selfie in my life. I've taken, never posted.
Really?
Never posted a selfie.
Look at you,
I
little shy thing.
Find that really weird.
Oh, yeah.
I guess it's maybe a generational thing.
I think the definitions are important here, because, you know, like, where do you draw the line between, say, you know, having a good self-esteem, you know, and a healthy one at that, a healthy ego, you know, self-love almost, versus, you know, narcissism, though? Like, is it, I wonder if you cross that line only when it starts becoming overbearing on others around
okay.
you.
Okay, I see what you mean, because sometimes it's about self-confidence, right? Narcissism can be mistaken for self-confidence. If you think you're good, why not sell yourself that way? You know, because no one else is going to talk you up if you don't talk yourself up. But the difference is, narcissists believe that they are awesome and that you're not. So they believe that they're better than you.
There we go.
So people with healthy self-confidence will say, yeah, I'm good. I'm good at my job. I'm good at this. I'm good at that. But so are you. You can be good too.
Right.
And that's the difference. I think narcissists feel so good about themselves that they don't want others to overshine that.
So
like,
Yeah, so I wonder what happens when you put two narcissists in a room. It's like, then what happens? Like, who's the better one? Like, they might even duke it out.
You know what happens?
What happens
if they're on a date? Okay, research has shown that if you put two narcissists on a date, it goes fantastically well.
Really?
Yes, the first few dates are amazing, incredible. But it is a steep decline after 4 months. So you get
why
a
four
great,
months? It's not so arbitrary.
I mean, well, apparently research says that they've put people together who have ranked highly on the narcissistic scale.
Right.
they put them together on dates and, you know, monitored the relationships. And they showed a sharp decline after the first few months.
Are you sure it's two separate people, or it's not just, you know, one person on a date staring at himself or herself in the mirror? Are you sure? Because I'm thinking, like, you know, can you imagine how that date would go, though? It's like two narcissistic people there, probably, very likely, talking about themselves
okay,
and
but,
talking themselves
but if
up.
You think about, say, a job interview, right? A narcissistic person would do fantastically well in a job interview because they can sell themselves. They can talk themselves up. And at first impressions, you'd be like, wow, this person's great. Why didn't, where, how come we haven't found him or her before?
And then 4 months later.
Four months in, you're like,
this guy's the worst hire
that's
ever.
That's right. Because, you know, he thinks he's great, but not so much you.
Wait, hold on. So I'm now, 7 weeks on a job now? So I've got another 2.5 months ago.
You're safe. But the funny thing is, narcissists are likely to get promoted and be leaders because of that self-confidence, Han. So if you look at some of the world leaders, they are self-admitted narcissists. Yeah.
Napoleon was a pretty famous narcissist.
Well, we don't have to go back that far in history. Just at the start of the year, we got a new president who seems to be quite pleased with himself, right, and you know, he seems to think very highly of himself.
He's got huge hands.
He's got huge hands. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So I guess all in all, it's funny because you see that narcissists tend to rise in the world. They make the leaders. They get promoted. They get the job that you didn't get. So is it a bad thing to be a narcissist? Well, at the end of the day, can you say that it is bad? Because clearly they've got a leg up.
Well, but then, judging by the research points that you mentioned, it seems to be a bit short-lived. And I mean, I'm not saying that has any bearing
that's
on
true.
Donald Trump, you know, but, you know, it seems to be short-lived, because whether it be in your dating life, you know, after 4 months, or perhaps in your careers, you know, that's where maybe you'll find out, oh, he or she is not such a good team player. You know, so perhaps the apparent positive effects from narcissism is, you know, has a limited shelf life.
Yeah. I wonder whether, coming back to the issue of social media, whether we've been allowed to, or we've condoned narcissism within society. I like my friends' selfies. I sometimes think, oh wow, she's gorgeous. Why not flaunt it?
Filter,
right?
filter that one.
Filter. And I have to say, maybe we should change our attitudes about being narcissistic. There's a certain negative connotation that comes with that. And perhaps in a small way, it's confidence building. I mean, in small doses.
Yeah, perhaps. But then also, I mean, going back to the word you used just now, so perhaps you want to suppress some of those narcissistic...
So before you post that selfie, you know, you just take a step back and go, well, how many selfies have I posted this week?
Well, and so apparently, according to some of these articles here, there is a narcissistic personality inventory test.
So I
clicked on the link real quick, and it's a bunch of a series of questions. It's just radio buttons, you know, and you choose either or. I haven't gone down to the, you know, to the end of the test, but perhaps it's something that we can tweet out later.
Yes,
and then
let's
everyone
do that.
Can you know, just take a narcissistic personality inventory test going into the weekend.
So I mean, and they're kind of basic, I guess, you know, personality traits. So.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be about you being narcissistic. It can be something like, oh, I have a natural talent for influencing people. Some people do.
Hmm.
So you can just tick that, and who knows, maybe that might add to your narcissistic score, which I'm not saying is a bad thing. Narcissistic people do very well in the world. We're going to tweet it out. Make sure you tell us what your score is. I'm curious to know. But right now we've got Lynn Mark standing by with a news bulletin on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. It's now 6:39, just turning 6:40. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han here this morning. Now, thanks. A quick mention to Chui for tweeting in. Thanks for your tweet. He said that he knows a friend who has been to North Korea and wants to go back there for another holiday because he loved the communal living. This is what we were discussing a little earlier, Han, about how I didn't know we could travel to North Korea visa-free.
Yeah, that's right. And so I tweeted him back saying, you know, unfortunately, I'm not very adventurous when it comes to my vacations. I like to have a bit of... I'm a you know, creature of comfort, you know. So the idea of going to Pyongyang where there's communal living and having to deal with a somewhat alien culture, I don't know if that's really appealing to me. So I think I'll just stick to my, you know, good old, you know,
Malaysia. Yes, right. Okay, well, we came across some really interesting news that the Nokia 3310 may be making a comeback as a retro $80 handset.
Yay!
So, yeah, you're happy about that?
I mean, well, it is, I guess, romantic in a way, in the technological sense, you know, because, I mean, look, I think everybody I knew back then had that Nokia handset, but that particular one. And then when you consider the popularity of Snake, you know, like, I mean, it's such a new phenomenon, right? Being able to play that Snake game on a mobile device for the very first time, you know, that took up hours of your life. Hours.
So you had one when you were younger.
Oh, yeah. And it was a big deal, you know, like when I actually had it, it's like, wow, I have this mobile device. Look, I come from a family of 9 kids. Imagine trying to share the home phone with, you know, 8 other people and your parents, you know, all fighting for this one device, for those precious phone time.
That's
now
true.
You've got your own personal mobile device and you can play Snake on the go.
Okay.
How awesome was that?
All right. For me, it's not about Snake. For me, it was how hardy that phone was. I don't know about you, but I dropped that phone from the second story bedroom window.
Yeah.
And I remember there was one time I had it when I was, I think, 17 or 18, if I'm not mistaken. I had it on the dashboard. I was just learning to drive.
Okay.
So I had it on the dashboard. Didn't realize the passenger window was open. And we did a sharp U-turn. The phone flew out of the car into the main street of Jalan Jelutong in Penang.
No,
and that, I don't know whether you know it, but that is one busy road, I tell you. I stopped the car, went across the street to pick up all the pieces, turned it on and called my mom.
It was
amazing. The phone worked.
Oh my gosh. And so, I mean, can you imagine, like, nowadays you would not, I mean, your phone today would not survive even anything
close to it.
I've
shattered screens of iPhones just dropping it from my lap to the floor. I mean, clearly I should get a case, but you know, but you know, I've ruined thousands of dollars of phones just by being naturally clumsy. So that's why I think I would love to have a 3310 again.
And
but
now,
what would you do without the internet, though?
And for a low price of just $80. Now, is that 80 US dollars? Or
80, 80 US dollars,
80 US
yeah.
dollars. So that's what time?
So a couple of hundred, a few hundred ringgit.
Plus,
yeah.
What?
A few hundred ringgit.
I would take that in a heartbeat, though, because what else can you find for 300 bucks nowadays? And again, I think it's mainly the nostalgia that will, you know, appeal to me. Not just the look and feel of the headset, the handset, the sturdiness of it, but also the sounds. Like, I wish, I don't know, is it too late to find a YouTube clip of the Nokia sound?
It's Yeah, oh my God, that ringtone, isn't it? Iconic ringtone. But we were speaking yesterday, I was talking to Chuang about switching off, about, you know, your phone has so much information about you, and before you realize it that, you know, you're essentially giving away all this private information about you. Perhaps the 3310 is a way to remain connected, what the phone was meant to be, right?
That's right, you know, keep it down to the bare
bones.
Bare
minimum, yeah, so basics. You're still connected.
Just phone and SMS, that's it, right?
What would you
and
do?
Snake.
What would you do if you went out and had makan at your local mama shop and the guy next to you pulled out a Nokia 3310 and put it on the table? Would that freak you out?
Yeah, big time. And I was like, dude, like, that is so awesome.
That is a talking point right there.
You are the coolest guy in the mama right now. I don't care who you are. Mad props to you, man. I want to get one of those as well.
It's been about 20 years now since they launched that.
Why
can you imagine?
You got to bring that up now, Melissa? Oh my gosh.
What I do want to point out is that with this coming back, it seems like retro is the new in thing. And I don't know whether that's counterculture, you know, so they say the hipsters are retro, but it's really not. In fact, it's becoming more and more mainstream as people are rejecting technology, people are trying to scale back the noise in their lives. I read an article recently that in the US, the sales for TV aerial antenna have gone through the roof in the past few months.
Really?
People are looking for old TV antennas or TV aerials because they want to tap back into, they want to switch off the Netflix and the streaming and the Hulu, and they want to get back to, say, terrestrial TV or that kind of old where it's not forced down at you. You get bombarded with so much noise after, you know, binge watching on Netflix.
No, yeah, it makes sense. And I do remember when I was in the States, there was this club where they all operated like AM or shortwave radios.
Oh, wow.
So like it becomes this little club of sorts where like they literally would dial each other's frequencies and like talk to one another, you know, via these like really old like World War II looking sets, you know, and it's amazing. And also, I guess that's like uber hipsterism, you know, of sorts, you know. But I guess I can see the sense of community that you can get around these gadgets. And I'm sure if the Nokia 3310 comes back, man, I would start. Well, would it
you would buy it, right?
Yeah, I would buy it. But then,
if would you be a hipster if you bought it?
Well, no, I'll just be an old uncle, lah. Okay. You know? But if I do start up
like
a
techno,
if I do start up a Facebook page, you know, called like the, I'm sure there's a Facebook page, you know, for like Nokia 3310.
There's a Facebook
lovers.
Page for everything.
Yeah, I know. So I gotta look at that.
Yeah, there you go. I also, as I was thinking about this, I remember a conversation I had about this very issue, you know, about retro. Making its way back, retro items making its way back. And I said, well, what about vinyl? You know, is vinyl that retro thing that's making its way back? And one of my friends who is a huge audiophile said, no, vinyl has never gone away.
Because
vinyl essentially, it's about the quality of the sound, right? But then again, you think about cassette tapes. Wouldn't you love it if the Walkman made a comeback? No?
Not so much on that one.
So if you had a 3310 and then a Walkman, so that would cover your music streaming and your phone calls.
But then there's two devices. that you were strapped to your belt. Do you remember, you know, you were strapped into your belt?
It's a fanny pack. Yeah. Oh, I think Kusi Chuang has one.
No, that's just his belly. What are you talking about? Oh, I'm kidding. It's terrible. Okay. I'm sorry, Chuang.
Well,
no, I'm not.
Speaking about technology, Han, there's plenty of technological gadgets for pet owners and dog owners specifically that have promised to decode your pet dog's true feelings. Last month, a smart dog collar was launched on Kickstarter with the aim of measuring your dog's daily activity to work out what it was feeling. And now new research has shown that perhaps dogs have more insight into the feelings of man, because researchers at Kyoto University have worked out that dogs, as well as some species of monkey, have almost human-like senses of morality.
And that's right. So I was looking at the video for this particular experiment. It was fascinating because you got three different people there. You know, two of them would display traits like sharing, for example.
Oh.
But then the other two wouldn't, right? And then so once you know, some of them would offer treats to the dog more often than not gravitates to the one who showed, you know, empathy and, you know, these kind traits.
I knew it. This is just confirming what I already suspected about animals. They can sense horrible people.
Ah, there we go.
They don't like horrible people.
Yeah, is it? No, so yeah, no, but I mean, I think that's fascinating. But then it begs the question then, so what makes us humans so special if they have morality as well?
I know.
And, you know, we have this warped, you know, like really diluted and sense of morality that's often so confusing, you know, whereas these animals can just, again, keep it to the bare basics. So I think there's a theme here, right? Be the Nokia 3310 versus morality, you know, yeah. It's like just keep it to the basics.
Keep it basic, yeah. Exactly. We're going to tweet out this article because I think dog lovers everywhere would love it. Just love it.
And then I would also think that with that collar, right, that technological aspect of this, mm-hmm. I think it just brings us all one step closer to becoming Dr. Doolittle. Do you remember Dr. Doolittle? You know, then we can understand what these animals are saying.
Oh, like, Dr. Doolittle.
How awesome is that?
Okay, you know? You're really bringing back the nostalgia with Nokia.
It's a throwback, you know, throwback
to the 90s. Yeah. All right, we've got the Spencer Davis Group coming up with Gimme Some Loving. But make sure you stay tuned because news is coming up right at the top of the hour on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.